When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You're listening to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
This week, we're speaking about Kipchoge versus Bekele. At London, we're speaking about running and fatherhood and why those new Nike shoes look like they're going to get banned.
Ooh,
so big news last week, Ben, was that Kenenisa Bekele will be taking part at the London Marathon in April, and he will, of course, be going head-to-head with the little-known Eliud Kipchoge.
The meeting of two very underrated, barely talked about runners.
Yeah, super exciting, I think. And you know that I'm a big Bekele fan.
You are.
So I was like, wow, this is actually amazing, because Kipchoge, like, it can feel like it's going to be a procession for him, can't it? Because he's just like, he wins all the time.
He does. And I will champion his cause.
Okay, well, I'm going to champion Bekele then.
Oh, great. So it's a Rick Pearson, Ben Hobson head-to-head okay. For the Bekele Kipchoge head-to-head.
Well, you can go first then.
All right. Eliud Kipchoge is the fastest man on the planet.
That is the case.
Right, no. So I think for a fair fight, let's skip over the small point that is Eliud Kipchoge running sub-2 in okay. Vienna. So we're not going to use that as the benchmark for anything. We'll reference it because yeah. It's important, but I think let's compare 2018-2019 Berlin marathons.
Okay.
So that's the start point. So current world record holder, Eliud Kipchoge, 2 hours, 1 minute, 39 seconds.
Yes, that's true, Ben, but we're talking about 2 seconds here.
We
because
are.
Because Bekele obviously ran same course
yep.
the year after, 2 seconds slower. So actually, the actual times in official races with no pacers
uh-huh.
and no magical shoes
yes.
that now maybe not allowed to be running
yeah.
are actually almost identical. So I think we can think that Kipchoge is out on his own, he's the fastest man, but only by 2 seconds, Ben. It's nothing.
I know. No, I agree. I think that it was a real surprise when Bekele ran that time.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say that he had a time to chase.
True.
So when Kipchoge set the world record in 2018, unknown territory.
Mm.
So he was just headed out. You know, it was a different race. The two raced a very different style of race. Kipchoge was basically on his own from mile one. Not his own, had pacers. But from mile one, Kipchoge was separate from the pack.
Yep.
Bit of a time trial, really. A bit of a, you know, as you say, a procession to see what this man could do. And obviously set a fantastic world record. So as the man, who went into uncharted territory and set a record,
yeah,
he and mentioning the unmentionable of breaking two, he's got so much more room to improve.
Yeah, I give you that. I would say this. Though. Let me ask you a question.
Go.
Who holds the track records for the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters? Because a lot of people might listen and think, oh, it's probably Mo Farah, or remember Haile Gebrselassie? He was quick. It's not.
It's not
him at all. It's Bekele. He holds both records. His pedigree on the track and cross country is amazing. Much, much better than Kipchoge's, actually.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that one. His speed, and you can see it when he runs, the power that he has, which can come from track and cross country. Yeah, he's pretty
he's
much...
He's royalty, this guy.
He's one of the best. The best.
You could say that he's the best track runner of those kind of distances ever.
Yeah.
And I know it's like, okay, Mo's very good at that stuff as well, and his marathon career hasn't quite been what it might have been. Mm. But Bekele, actually, he's been a bit inconsistent. But that run in Berlin, it puts him like in the same bracket, or I think, as Kipchoge. So I think he's really got a good good chance here.
Yeah, I'm gonna. But the thing is, that was almost like a sporadic moment. So you say like his previous best was 2016,
right?
Bekele's. So Kipchoge's form began like 2014, and he's won an unrelenting amount of races since then. There's an argument to be made that Kipchoge's consistency is most definitely his strongest point. And the fact is he's only getting faster means that I feel like London is in the bag.
So I agree with you. He's so consistent, isn't he?
Yeah.
And this is why I think that Kipchoge, at some point, the same way that, say, the German football team, very occasionally don't get out of their group.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or New Zealand, you know, that don't quite do it in the World Cup when all the stats say it should. Kipchoge is due an off day at some point. He's a human being. Do you know what I mean? Like,
is he?
the guy's a human being, and he's won what, like 12 out of the 13 marathons he's done. Yeah. At some point, he's going to have an off day, and if he has even a slight off day, and Bekele has a good day, this is why I think it's different, right? I think you could say, when it was Mo, like last year, you say, Mo's got to have his best day and Kipchoge's got to have his worst day by some way.
Yeah, yeah.
So you think those two things happening in London actually is quite unlikely.
Yep.
That's not the case this time. Like, Kipchoge's got to have a really good day and Bekele's going to have a really good day and it's going to be close.
With 2 seconds.
Yeah.
This is giving you an extra point in the argument, but I feel like if the two of them are heading towards the mound, they're next to each other.
Yeah.
My money would be on the track man.
I think Bekele could take him in a sprint finish. I think so.
You know, if it comes down to a sprint and Elliott's got 2 seconds on him,
yes,
and they're both flat out, is he going to make up that?
No, because Kipchoge's no slouch. Is it?
This is it. We don't want to start painting this false picture of him being slow. All right. Well, I'm going to say that the best performance at London.
Oh yeah,
for Kipchoge versus Bekele is a story in itself. There's a 2-minute, 20-second difference.
Yeah, which is, when those two running, that's like more than half a mile, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that. You know, Kipchoge knows how to win in London, doesn't he? He almost expects to win in London, I think. And they've met in marathons 4 times before, and your guy's won all four. Okay, yep. And it hasn't actually been massively close. I get that. But actually, over all terrains and distances, Bekele's beating Kipchoge more than Kipchoge's beating Bekele. So he's actually very, very used to beating Kipchoge. Okay, not over a marathon, but I don't think that Kipchoge has the fear factor for Bekele in the same way that he does, like, say, for a lot of the other marathon guys who are just like, they haven't known victory over him.
Yeah. No, I would actually say that you're right. And I think a sense of intimidation, his untouchableness that Kipchoge probably had, is now has got to be a bit... You know, the shine has come off it because he's, you know, the guy is 2 seconds off him on the same course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there's got to be a bit of, and I mean, you could never tell watching him run that he feels anything but pure joy, but there's got to be a bit of like, you know, I'm still the best, but I'm not the best by the big margin.
Yeah, and I think that you can say, well, look, Kipchoge's run 1:59, but I think, like, as you were saying at the start, like, that has to be looked at as a kind of outlier in its own thing. Looks at that, I'm sure, and thinks, well, if I had all those things in Vienna, I would have run under 2 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
And I think that the two Berlin races that they both set their, you know, the best times, if you look at the way that those races panned out, Kipchoge was, he was separate from the bunch early doors and had some pacers with him and he just ran as fast as he could. And that was kind of like this, you know, that was this benchmark world record time that he set.
Mm.
And Bekele's race was very, very different. And it was like, it was an actual competitive race. And, you know, he wasn't leading the whole time. He was chasing people and a time that was already set now. So, like, Kipchoge's now got a benchmark to chase that isn't sub 2 and it's not with paces, it's to better his London time and he knows that he can run faster because he already has. And Bekele now knows his potential and has run this 2 seconds slightly slower Berlin time, so he can absolutely just like destroy his current London best. So that when it comes to sort of the psychological balance of like who's going to be out there and thinking more about the race and how it goes, I think it's just open.
I think it is. And also, I mean, we're going to talk with Kerry about the shoe factor. Because I think, you know, an interesting subplot on this is, well, you've got the two best guys going head-to-head. You know, competition drives people onwards. Could we see sub 2 in London?
Oh, no. I'm just going to go no because of the course and you know, the times and all that sort of stuff. But you're right. I do think that, what's the current London one? Hold on. Let me find it. It's 202.37.
Okay.
It's the current London.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it got, I reckon you could probably go maybe under 202. Under the
Oh, I reckon so, yeah.
Do you think?
I think so. But I think, I do think a little bit of it is shoe dependent, actually.
Right.
Because if, as we'll discuss later on, if there is a ban on the Next Percents or the Alpha Fly shoe, you know, that does seem to make a couple of minutes difference, actually. So
it will. Yeah. I think it probably will. But nevertheless, I still think that it's going to be one hell of a race.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw out there, I think, in a bit of a shocker, Bikili wins. Great race, but Bikili beats, you know, just outdoes him in the last half a mile.
I am obviously going to say the opposite.
Yeah.
I actually, no, to be honest, I quite like to see Bikili win it.
Yeah.
Because of underdogs and change of the guard and sort of like mixing the whole thing up. But I just think that Kipchoge is still better.
Yeah.
I think he's just still a better runner. He looks more comfortable when he runs. Mm. I think that there's like those 2 seconds can be accredited to a hundred of different things. But I think if you look at the way they both run, the power of Bikili is incredible.
Yeah.
And that's why the track and cross country, it works so well. But like the fluid motion of Kipchoge, I feel like is going to just win him out in terms of those small incremental differences of when they get there.
It's gonna be exciting, isn't it?
They're both on the NN running team.
Yes, right.
So I feel like perhaps a 2019 performance, you know, he's actually been training with Kipchoge more, and or they're certainly involved in the same team, which means that you can kind of, the influence of sub two means that's where that performance came from, because there's a sort of a different approach. So they're, in terms of like level playing fields, there's obviously now a 2 second difference between times, and I don't think much difference between kit, approach, method, any of those sort of like factors.
Yeah.
Which means that I think that London will be very interesting.
Yeah, I think so as well. Final thing.
Yes.
They're both getting on a bit, aren't they?
Yeah.
So Bikili, my man Bikili is 37, I think.
Yeah.
And Elliot's 35.
Yeah.
So you would think traditionally that's a kind of twilight of elite marathon running. But
maybe that's changing.
Maybe it's changing, yeah. Who knows? Exciting times ahead anyway in April. Let us know what you think. Who's going to win? Are you going to side with me and say Bikili's going to have an underdog victory? Or do you think Ben's right and Kipchoge is going to gonna win again? Podcast at runnersworld.co.uk.
Back.
It's Kerry McCarthy's back with some news and some discussion.
Good afternoon. This week I am combining a bit of news, which hopefully most of the audience will have seen, being dedicated runners that they are, but I'm covering it off just in case they haven't. And then it's going to kind of merge into a bit of a debate between us, I hope. It's about those shoes again. The Nike Vaporflies, the Next Percents, which you may have seen are set to be banned, very possibly going to be banned. Now these, if you've had your head under a rock for the last 6 months or so, these are the shoes that Bridget Koskay wore to smash Paula Radcliffe's world record at the Chicago Marathon in the autumn. And Eliud Kipchoge wore a modified, highly modified version of them, a kind of like a next version, which is nominally called the Alpha Fly, when he ran his amazing sub two. Now, both those things, coupled with many, many complaints from non-Nike athletes, have led to World Athletics getting their experts together and looking at whether these shoes give athletes an unfair advantage. They're apparently going to conclude that they are, and that the shoes should be banned, with that ban coming into play at the Tokyo Olympics this summer.
Right.
So it's all a little bit contentious. To put this in context a little bit, as to possibly just how much of an advantage these shoes give. If you saw Elliot doing his thing on the streets of Vienna, you'll obviously know how amazing that was. Paula's world record, which she set in 2003, was 2:15:25. The person who got closest to that was Paula Radcliffe with 2:17 something or other. 2:17:42. So that's kind of 2.5 minutes slower a couple of years later. Nothing happened until last year, and then Bridget Koskay comes along and runs 2:14:04. kind of out of nowhere. She's had a very, very rapid progression in her marathon career through the times. It's only about 3 years that she, 3 years ago, she was running something like 2:45.
Mm.
So you can kind of see why eyebrows are being raised. But one thing that potentially worries me is the fact that the powers that be are saying, right, we're going to ban these shoes, but the existing records will stand.
Okay.
What do you guys think about that?
Well, this is in the mould, isn't it, of what happened with... I know there's comparisons are made to the Speedo wetsuit.
Yeah, the laser racer.
The laser racer. So, like, lots of records were banned. And not banned, were broken. But those records were allowed to stand.
Mm.
Yeah.
Some of those records still stand to this day. Over half have since been broken without a suit. So there's a kind of precedent for doing that, for saying actually, look, they were legal at that time. Subsequently, we decided actually that it's not fair. So there's part of me that thinks maybe that's all right.
I think to be sort of almost like bohemian about it, I feel like the ebb and flow of like running and how it evolves and all those sorts of things. Part of me believes that that was the case at the time. Those were the rules at the time. So that is. Those records stay.
Yeah. I think you've got a different opinion, Kay, or not.
I see what you're both saying, but I just think it's a bit more complicated than that, you know.
When do they revert back to then? So if you take out... So what would be the... What would... If they delete...
If they get rid of Cosguy's record.
Yeah, what? So does it revert back to Paula?
It reverts Paula.
So what about the men's race then? So what would that go back to? So
first pre-Vaporfly.
But is it that? Is it like? Is that going to be the benchmark?
Well, they're not saying. Let's not forget that before the next percent, there was the Vaporfly 4%. Yeah. The next, which apparently makes you, it's so named because it makes you 4% faster.
Yeah.
The next percent was so named because it made you 5% faster.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, the 4%, is that banned or is 4% faster acceptable?
There's so much grey area there.
Yeah, there is. It's really complicated. And one of the other things to bear in mind, it kind of sounds like I'm, you know, flying the flag for Britain here because it concerns Paula Radcliffe, but I'm really not. It's just a coincidence that she happens to be Team GB. But her world record of 2:15.25 set in 2003, like I said, in 2011... Mm. World Athletics, the IAAF, decided that that was going to be downgraded from a world record to a world best because she used male pacemakers in a women-only race. Clearly, those pacemakers weren't, you know, officially taking part. So I feel she's kind of had her record nicked off. As it happened, she had the next fastest time anyway, but it was much closer to what everyone else was achieving. And suddenly they said, this phenomenal time that you set, you can't have it anymore. They didn't say, OK, you used the technology, in this case, pacemakers, that we now wouldn't allow, but it's allowed to stand. They took it away from her. So why would you not do the same with Cosguy's record?
Yeah, it's I guess there are so many grey areas of this, aren't there? In that we don't know exactly. My understanding is that it's an issue about carbon fibre plates. So if you say that carbon fibre plates are a problem, then the 4% would be banned as well. And this is slightly not what you're asking. So is it like, is the next percent just going to go? Or is it the 4% going to go? Is it every shoe that has a carbon fibre plate? Because it's quite a lot now.
My understanding of it is that it's more about the amount of foam, because the greater the wedge of foam that you can have, the steeper the angle you can place the carbon fibre plate at, and thus the more propulsion you get.
Right.
So if they put limits on future on the, you know, let's say a stack height of 20 centimetres rather than 25 or whatever it might be, then obviously there's a limit to what you can do with the carbon fibre technology. I mean, just having that particular material in the shoe, I don't think they're going to ban that, because in and of itself, that's not what gives you the performance enhancements. It's all the factors coming together. But, you know, if you say we're going to ban it, you're going to ban it at elite level. We were discussing this in the office the other day. Okay, so the elites, that makes sense because they make a lot of money out of it. But what about sub-elites? Those athletes that go around and make a kind of scrape an okay living from getting, you know, a few hundred quid here, a grand there for mopping up races, or even at the level below that, very dedicated club runners who don't do it for money, but they do it for club pride.
Yeah.
You know, recently, I think, Rick, you spotted this, there was a recent Ekiden event in Tokyo, which is a kind of a Japanese team relay taken extremely seriously in Japan. 85% of runners were wearing the Nike Vaporfly, whereas previously they would have been wearing, of course, the Japanese brands of Asics or Mizuno.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the cat is out of the technological bag a bit, and it's like, ban it and take away the records, or just suck it up.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of people that are wearing these, even like you say, the kind of competitive end of amateur running.
Oh, you look
everyone's invested in these.
Look
shoes.
At any race photo. Yeah. Look at any like from the last however months, and it was just it's awash with pink and green.
Yeah.
Because that's it. That's all you see on people's feet. Certainly at the first half of the race, and I mean, you can't like the impact has been massive in terms of like general marathon times going up.
Definitely.
Yeah. And all those sorts of things. Yeah. So. I know, yeah.
It's cost a factor. Now, I've worn these shoes. I actually got, you know, I got my marathon PB in them. They feel like nothing else you've ever worn. It is a little bit like wearing pogo sticks. But part of me also thinks, you know, they cost £250, or they were when they first came out. I'm sure that you can get them reduced now. But if these shoes were £100 for the sake of argument and much more accessible to the masses and kind of everybody had a pair, would they just go, oh, well, fine?
But I mean, I kind of feel like everyone almost does have a pair. Like if you look at imagery and those sorts of things, I don't know. I think that like
I mean a lot of competitive club runners have a pair. Yeah, it's I think it's and also
let's not that one. Even off that, then they might have the 4%.
Yeah,
and it's other brands, isn't it? Like you know, it's an open secret, isn't it? That other like lots of other brands are
trying. Hoka have a carbon plate in their shoes. Yeah. Yeah. It was you know we saw over well some of you may have seen over the weekend that Adidas had a prototype shoe. That was being secretively running at the Houston Marathon. And that thing, it's like they're like moon boots. You know, they obviously had no branding on them or anything because they were kind of like secretly testing them out. But if the rules don't change, then Adidas will presumably launch whatever that prototype is. And then it's kind of like an arm.
It's a bit of an arms race.
But it's kind of a bit like saying, America saying, okay, we got to the moon first, but now we're banning anyone else from trying to get to the moon. So it'll just stay with us.
Yeah, true.
Allowing the records to stand but banning the shoes is a pulling up of the drawbridge, I feel. And it will dissuade athletes from other manufacturers for feeling they can break records or going for them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, are these records with the shoes, are they going to be unattainable for the next 20 years without the shoes? Because it's a lot of time off, isn't it?
Well, nobody got near Paula's record without these shoes. And then
same with the men's record. I mean, we've taken what? I mean, let's leave the sub two on its own. I still think like 2 minutes has been taken off marathon time in these shoes.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's a lot of time at the elite level marathon running.
Yeah.
It'd be quite interesting to see, you're talking about, you'd probably have to remove the top end elite, like so your Kipchoges and your Bekele's, but sort of to go back down the rankings of a few majors and find the closest runner placement who's not in a, probably an Adidas runner, who's not in a pair of Nike shoes and just see how their performance matches.
Well, I think most of the marathon majors do that every year now. They have poor people who are there to kind of clock every single pair of shoes and what brand they are coming across the finish line in the order they come across the line. So I would imagine that data will be at some point readily available.
Because you would get like a benchmark of how much the shoe is changing everything. If you've got runners of a similar level and ability, and one is in this shoe and the other's in the other shoe, then obviously, I mean, the records speak so far that the significant difference, the Vaporfly has made a massive difference. But it just, I think, if they're going to ban a record, then they're with the shoes, they're in a real dangerous territory of just like, at what point are they stripping it back? Like, are they going to go back to when Boost was bought out? Because then that was obviously that changed, you know, energy return and things like that. So are they going to go to the they go back to the 70s when everyone was just a pair of Jazz, Saucony Jazz, and that was it.
Like, this is why I think that the easier thing to do is to say, it's not about stack height, say that we can have no carbon fibre plates in shoes.
Right.
Because that's a binary thing, isn't it? You either have a carbon fibre plate in a shoe or you don't.
Yeah.
And you can say that shoe has it and that shoe doesn't. It's quite a simple thing to be able to ban if you were to do it. It may be that there are too many shoes and they've been around too long for that to happen, but I think that's a fairly easy kind of, if you've got it or you haven't, right? Everything that's got it, at elite level, you're not allowed to run it, it doesn't count. But I don't know if that is actually it doesn't sound like that's what's being suggested.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. It's intriguing, because I'm sure we're confused and struggling to find a solution here.
Yeah.
Imagine what those guys who have to come up with a ruling are feeling the pressure from all different sides.
Do you think that we could potentially, as in the sort of Tour de France, where they have like, you know, secret motors in bikes.
Yeah, the mechanical doping.
Yeah,
like what, shoes. Well, they're called Heelys, aren't they?
could we actually have, you know,
imagine seeing
secret,
that.
just
down, just sprinting along and then just sliding.
Mo Farah overcoming the strictures of getting old by just putting wheels in his shoes.
Secret carbon fibre plates in shoes.
No, well,
if they were banned, though, can't you see that? Couldn't that happen?
They'll come up with technology to test. You have to walk over a foot plate which identifies what's in your shoe.
Before every bike race, the UCI commissaires go around scanning bikes for motors. So something easier would take place in carbon fibre. They would just have to... They'd probably stick a hypodermic needle through the midsole to see if there was any resistance or something clever.
I wondered where that needle was going to be stuck. Then.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Scary future. Scary
yeah,
future.
Indeed. Anyway, do let us know what you're thinking, whether you are somebody who owns a pair of these shoes or has been thinking about it, or you just have an opinion that you want to share. Do let us know at podcast@runnerswell.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Rick, yeah. Countdown.
Yes, due to be a new father at the end of this month.
Let me impart all of my knowledge. No, come on. It's not often that we just have you and I having a chat about something on the podcast. So people just have to put up with it. If you know, there's no experts here, but it's nice to have a chit chat.
Agreed. Yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling very excited, actually. I think it's something for me that's become. It started to feel more real over the last 2 months, possibly because visually my wife now looks very pregnant. I think actually the first few months as a kind of prospective dad, yeah. You can be a bit like, oh, I can't see anything that's massive physical change. We've had a pretty simple like pregnancy, I guess, so far, touch wood. But now it's like, right, we've been to the NCT classes, yeah. It's about to happen. And yeah, and I think one of the balances I want to try to get right is, yeah, my own interests, yeah. Along with also being a good dad.
I mean, this is the great balancing act that yeah. comes with the whole thing. I think that the main thing that I picked up straight away was that the importance of things shifts quite dramatically. Yeah. So I know that when you were doing, you know, you've done your ultra this year and you had like PBs that you wanted to get as like yeah. benchmarks before becoming a dad.
Yeah.
I think that that's kind of like, that's a very honest and like normal reaction. It's kind of like you feel like there's an end of something coming.
Yeah, trying to cram in certain things. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the reality is, I think that, you know, with some excellent time management and some understanding between each other, things kind of can be pretty normal, especially in the early months when everything's like is kind of, unless bottle feeding is the way you go, then pretty yeah. much it's on the mum to be doing the bulk of the activities.
Yeah.
So sleep is your main enemy.
Yeah.
To begin right. with, but the rest of it, like, yeah, I think that I think I tried. And successfully managed to keep the training going as much as I wanted. But being at home suddenly becomes way more appealing as well.
Yeah, and I think that's possibly the narrative that I haven't heard enough of. I think that as dads, we can often get into this, oh, it's the end of, you know, you're not going to sleep and it's the end of...
Yeah.
Well, actually, what about some of the amazing benefits of having having a child in the world. I think that's we often don't say that as dads. Actually, like, actually, it's massively exciting because
it's the best.
Yeah,
I mean, this is probably me just generalizing from my point of view, but I think that when you are a runner or a cyclist or someone who has a pastime that they are incredibly passionate about, there is an inherent selfishness that comes with that because you dedicate a lot of your time and energy to achieving certain things with that activity. And initially, you're thrown by the introduction of a new person that you're responsible for because it does impact on your life routine and even habit, you know, it takes a while to get used to and all these sorts of things. So I think that there is a real sense of, something new and changed and different.
Yeah.
But I think that the rhetoric around it, which can be like, it's the end, you'll never get fast again, you'll never do this again.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. Like, it's just that I've got mates who've got two kids who've just run PB marathons because, you know, you become so much better at being organised.
Yeah, there's a kind of efficiency that I think you're going to have to try to do. Yeah, I heard this phrase someone used in one of our I'm a Runner interviews, and she called it a PB, which is post-baby personal best, which I think is quite, I mean, it's possibly more applicable to the mother, but I think dads can have a look at that as well, actually.
But I think that the line in the sand moves with everything that happens in life anyway, like kids, jobs, age, injury. So I think that you can say like a post-baby PB is definitely like the new thing you should look towards.
Yeah, yeah. We're trying to, I don't know if you've done this, but we were trying to say, like, obviously the first couple of months are a little bit their own thing. But then after that, actually, to be like, it'd be great to have, I'll say to Georgie, look, you can always have this weeknight is always your thing.
Yeah.
And if you can extend the same thing to me, so it's like, okay, I would probably choose that time to do some hard running, basically, with a local friend, basically.
Yeah.
And then everything else can be worked around that.
Yeah, there's some real easy, there's the obvious stuff, like you will work out a system regardless of whatever happens. Like, it's just the natural order of things be that, like, I don't know. Then there's things like commuting. So you've got to get to work. Now, if you haven't run commute previously, that's a great way of getting some miles because you're suddenly like, well, actually, if I get I can either run the whole way or I can get the train to a point and then run a bit more or that sort of stuff, which is because you've got to get to work and you've got to get home. Yeah. So you could do it twice a day if you wanted and then you'd
got to be running more than ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You'll be knackered. But this is, you know, I think that people do tend to feel like, it's going to be so tough and hard and it's not. It's just different. And I think that's great. And you just, you know, you become more motivated, actually, as well with these stuff. Like, there's more impetus.
Yeah, right.
On it because you're kind of like, all right, well, my time is now way more precious.
Yeah.
You don't want to be away. Like, you don't want to, like, anyone who's prioritised the running over the children is doing it wrong in my book.
Oh, I agree. And I think we have to say as runners, I think we often get our priorities can be quite skewed, I think. Because running rewards a kind of a slightly obsessive mentality that you can quite easily get in that kind of, well, if I could just do that strength and that other strength and conditioning thing in the week or those extra miles, and that can become a bit of an anxiety thing. Kind of like, oh, God, I can't do that extra bit.
Yeah, you can have that. And I think that the other thing is that it removes a lot of pressure because you are more time poor or you're tired or whatever it is, and you can suddenly just gleam a lot of pleasure and enjoyment and a bit of like your own time from a little run that you would have probably
taken for granted.
Yeah, you would have taken for granted or you possibly might not even bothered with.
Yeah.
Because you were doing 10 miles later on that week
something
like that. Whereas the opportunity to do two around the block while the baby's napping and the wife's having a nap as well, and, you know, like that sort of, those sorts of things, definitely. Like you gleam a lot of enjoyment out of the little nuggets of running joy that you get. And I think those are really, like, they become way more precious. I think that's nice as well.
Yeah. No, it's
Get a buggy. Get a running buggy.
Oh, I've got a running buggy.
Good.
Yeah, because I know you can't use a running buggy until children are, I think, 6 or 9 months old.
They've got to be pretty.
So it's down in the basement, but it's one of these Thule. I think that's how you pronounce it. Yeah, T H U L E.
The Swedish guy.
Swedish one. It looks great. It looks like a sort of Formula One car.
Yeah.
So no excuses. No excuses to do it.
Well, I think the world record is something mental in terms of.
Oh, like, yeah, no, it is. It's like someone's run like a 2:30 marathon or something with two kids, I think.
So there you go.
So that's something to aim for. Do you think that your relationship with running changed after the birth of your kid or not?
Yeah, definitely. There's no two ways about it. It changes completely, but not in a dramatic way. I think it's just kind of like this is the new level of that I'm at. Like this is what happens, and it's a time thing. It's being more efficient with what you're doing. It's using your lunch break. It's using your commute. It's using the time in the day that you might not have really bothered with before because you knew you were going to have other time to do it.
Yeah.
You just shuffle stuff around.
Yeah.
So I think that it just changes, and you probably have to alter your approach in terms of what you consider useful or for your betterment and those sorts of things.
Yeah, right, right.
But but at the same time, I've fully continued to enjoy running, cycling, parenting in equal measure throughout the whole time.
Doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. It's not really. And you know, I've taken Seb to some races, and he's watched like some cross country races, and he's enjoyed that. And he sits on the back of the bike, and I never had a running buggy. It was never something. That was the one thing I decided. I decided I wasn't gonna have him in a running buggy. If I was going to go for a run, I wanted to just still do it as a run for me, and not take him out in the buggy.
Yeah.
Which I would probably change if we had another.
Okay.
I would probably get one. But I think that initially that was the call that I made in terms of like, I don't want to have the, he's having a nap, so now I can go.
Yeah.
I would just go running if I had the opportunity.
Yeah, I've heard a few people say that. I think that there's something to be said for that, isn't that? Kind of slightly compartmentalizing, like, I'm actually not, I'm not parenting when I'm running.
That's yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's like a joy thing.
Yeah.
The other side of it is I think, mate, that I know that I'm a better person if I am being physically active.
Oh, yeah.
So I kind of want to, as a part of me is like, and actually I think my wife is someone who wants to be active as well, and that's great. Like, so there's part of me that thinks, well, I think that people who don't know running think, cool, you're running all the time, you must be knackered. But I think running gives you energy, actually, or any kind of aerobic thing gives you an energy within a reason. So I kind of think actually, like, it's an important part of my week in some ways to continue to do.
Well, I think that the negativity and again the rhetoric that we talk about the negative that comes from it is that people who are very used to training and running on a regular basis are used to a certain amount of chemical endorphiny brain balance stuff going on in terms of like, the exercise generates this, and I am happy. This, I get the rush, I'm the endorphin. Blah. So when that's removed, either you'll know it from an injury.
Yes, yes.
So when anyone's injured and they're out, there's a bit of a lull because they're not getting that. Like, and I think that that's the same with parenthood. I think people who, and it's natural. Like you, for the first few weeks, months, however long you're, you know, getting used to that whole setup, you'll be training less, which means that you're not getting the regular bump of happy joys from the running. You'll get 1,000 more from the baby, but you know, you're used to the running ones. And I think that that's where a lot of people consider it to be like, oh, the I'm unbalanced because I'm not doing enough of it. But at the same time, you will do enough of it.
Yeah, and I think possibly with the things that you really love, like, you know, and obviously your child comes into that as well. You do find time for things that are really important to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were having a chat just a minute ago about coming off social media freeing up time in the day.
Yeah,
and that's very much like what happens. You just cut off. And Major Sam McGrath, who was on the last podcast, his regimented lifestyle, which was quite extreme, but meant that he did all the things he needed to do.
Mm.
From a running point of view and from a family point of view and from a work point of view, so that he got everything done.
Yeah. We say about, was it hard edges to his day?
Hard edges to his day.
So this would be, what, it's 7 now? So
I'm done. Like, I'm done. Like, it's in terms of, like, you know, I'll be at work 20 minutes late because I've just been faffing, doing blah, blah, blah. No. Hard edges.
Yeah.
I'm doing this until this and then this and this and this meeting is until here and then I'm done for the day. So, you know, those 20 minutes you spend reading Twitter or the 10 minutes reading that story on The Guardian, which is, you know, about football or something,
yeah,
you're not doing that. Yeah. Hard edges. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. It's impressive, isn't it, in many ways? Like, it's possibly not for everyone, that kind of approach. But I do think...
No, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm not that.
You like flexibility?
It makes me tense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I need that line. I need blurred lines.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
It would make me too highly strung, I think, if I was stressing about time to that degree. I think some people really enjoy the measured approach and it gives them the balance, whereas I'm like... Oh, I just want 5 minutes.
Yeah,
I'll read my book for a little bit, and that'll, you know, I'll do this, and I like a little buffer zone between each task.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's funny actually, because this was on my mind about kind of parenthood and running. And we did a poll that said, do you ever feel guilty about making the time to run? I think it came back about 60% no, and 40% said yes. That was actually quite a reassuringly high amount of people who obviously just. Who feel confident that running isn't something for them to feel guilty about. But I do think that it's something that our new parents would probably...
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I felt really guilty about going out running before.
Yeah.
And spending time away. You feel guilty because you're not with the child and you want to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's obviously a brand new, like, toy, basically. Like, it's like when you get anything brand new, you want to, you know, look at this thing, it's amazing. And then you're... you feel guilty because the other person you're leaving, your spouse or partner or whoever, in charge.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's new and terrifying.
Mm.
So you're in a position where you're not like, you know, this isn't common. Like, however, a year down the line, you'll just be like, cool, bye, I'm out for a bit. You know what I mean? Like, you're old hand at it by this point. But the first few weeks, it's terrifying.
Yeah. No, I bet.
So you do feel guilty about it. So I think that the guilt is to be expected and to be respected almost in terms of like, actually, if I feel guilty, then maybe I shouldn't. Mm. But at the same time, it passes. Like that sort of guilt of stuff like becomes more like balanced and all those sorts of things.
Well, Ben, thanks very much for your sage wisdom.
My very, very personal experience.
No, I think it probably is for everyone, isn't it? But I'd be interested to know what our listeners have to say, how they've managed to balance running with parenthood. Maybe they even started running after becoming a parent as well, because I guess that's the other way that this can go. So
yeah, I saw a really, really interesting story about this the other day. It was a guy who was morbidly obese, he was worried that his daughter would be bullied because of his size.
Right.
So he started training and I think running to lose weight so that he didn't embarrass his, not embarrass, but you know, he didn't want to be the source of the bullying for his daughter. I thought that's the power of parenting. You see, that's the motivator.
Yeah.
The guy was, you know, he'd reached a point where he was, you know, off his own back, he probably might not have attempted to do such a thing.
Right,
the thought of his own daughter being bullied because of him, that was the motivation.
Yeah, he could do it for her, if not for himself, basically. So let us know. Yeah. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Love to hear about your running and parenthood stories.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.